I'm Ben Pugh, and you're listening to Impact, Parenting with Perspective, episode 149. This podcast is all about helping parents manage the mental and emotional drama that comes with parenting teens, so they can focus on what's most important, building rock-solid relationships and having a powerful impact on their teen's life. Join me each week as I dive into real tools to help you and your teen turn struggles into strengths. All right, guys, welcome to the podcast. I am super excited for today's episode because I am interviewing a fellow coach who I have looked up to for a very, very long time because I'm just in awe of all the amazing things that she's done. This is Corinne Crabtree. She is the host of the podcast, Losing 100 Pounds with Corinne Crabtree. She is also a super, super successful entrepreneur, and she has her own weight loss membership, and she's also starting a membership for business owners. And I'm just super excited to have her on the podcast. We had a really powerful conversation about your identity and being who you want to be. And I'm going to just, I don't know, pipe you into that interview. I hope you enjoy. So I want to introduce you guys. This is Corinne Crabtree, and she's doing a lot of things in her business. She has lost 100 pounds and has a weight loss coaching membership, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. We're a membership. Yep.
Awesome. And she's starting a business course. Is that tell me about that real quick.
It's a business membership. We started actually last July. It's growing. Like, I'm so proud of how we're working it and growing it. But it's newer. It's for online entrepreneurs who are coaches, course creators, in that online, their business is going to run online and they're going to market and find their clients online. So we teach like frameworks, best practices, just all the crap I learned as I was building my business over 15 years and mixing in a lot of that mindset work, because there's not enough. There's like, in business, it's either mindset or it's business. You don't find a lot of, you know, and. So we wanted to be that middle space.
And that's similar to what you did with the no BS weight loss, like weight loss with mindset, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's what I do with parenting. Like, there's so much parenting stuff out there that's, I actually believe most parenting advice is actually bad advice. It's usually more focused on your teenager or your kid, like, well, parent this way so you can change your teen and get them to do this.
Yes.
And I found that that just doesn't work. So I teach more of the mindset, more of the inner work, so that you can be the change you're looking for and you can leave your poor teen alone so that.
I like how you said that. Leave your poor kid alone.
Yeah, they don't have to change to make you feel better. You can do that all on your own. And you are also a mother. Tell us a little bit about that, because I think that fits really well with people who are listening to this podcast.
Yeah, I have a son. He's 20 years old. He was diagnosed with autism back when he was five. He was actually, when he was a year old, was the one that inspired me to get off the couch and start changing my life. I had, like, I dealt with a lot of depression in my teen years, real bad depression, was hospitalized, all kinds of stuff. And when I had him, I had a, like, postpartum, I had a really bad bout of depression again. And I knew that I wanted better for him. I wanted him to not have the obesity legacy passed down to him. But I also, I just wanted to be a more, like, connected mom. Like, I didn't feel connected to him. I just had a tough time. So that he was like that inspiration for me to figure out, how am I going to love myself? How am I going to talk to myself? How am I going to treat myself with food and everything? Because I didn't want to do that to him. And I knew that a lot of what I had learned, I had probably modeled after my mom and stuff. And I knew that I had to be the change agent. So I had to work on me in order to, you know, at least give him a chance to have a different life than I had.
Yeah, I love that. One of the things that I hear over and over when I coach parents, a lot of times we'll explore like, well, why do you parent this way? Like, where did this come from? And they're like, I don't know. I just learned it from my mom. And one of the most powerful things that I teach people, like parents are so focused on teaching their kids and getting their kids to change. And I'm like, your kids are not listening to you. They're not, like, you can teach them till you're blue in the face, but I'll often use the example, like, have you ever just yelled at your kid? And in the moment you realize, oh my goodness, I sound just like my mom or just like my dad. And every parent is like, yeah, I've experienced that. And I'm like, did your mom ever teach you, okay, so when you get mad, here's how you raise your voice and your tone level. And they're like, no, they never taught me that. And I'm like, so how did you learn it? And how we learn things is by what we observe. Mm-hmm. And so when I teach parents, the most powerful way to have a positive impact on your teenager is to be the change you're looking for. Stop trying to teach your teen and tell them, hey, this is what you do, this is what you don't do. Be that example, because now you're basically speaking straight to their subconscious and you're programming them for how adults behave based on how you behave. So go ahead.
Well, I had read at some point, I don't know where I read this, but they were talking about, like, especially in the teenage years, you know, there's such a desire in the teenager to be figuring out who they want to be, like really, you know, getting into their identity. And parents very often misread that when their kids are, you know, shutting, like they'll call it shutting down, not talking to them and doing all these things. It's like, now I can't have an impact. And it's such a normal process for teenagers. Like that is, they're supposed to be figuring out their identity. And sometimes the best way for us to figure out who we are is to shut out what's going on around, like as much as we can of what's going on around us, but they still pay attention. It's not like they're not watching. It's not like they're not internalizing. They're still doing all of that. But in order for them to figure out who they want to be, it's almost like they need that space. And they don't always want to be like their parents, even if they model them. It was just an interesting thing for me to think about when Logan was going through his teenage years, because he, you know, with autism, he wasn't the neurotypical teenager.
Yeah.
But he also, like, nothing comes naturally to Logan. Like, everything actually has to be taught to him. Yeah. And he's not resistant, but he learns a lot through watching and reading and stuff. And so it really made sense to me, like, when we were going through his teenage years, that if I wanted him to communicate in certain ways, I found it was always better to just do that type of communicating with him or do that with his daddy so that he could watch me do it. And then later on, this is where it kind of diverges from like a neurotypical kid's just absorbing all this. With Logan, we learned that we do a lot of modeling and then we go back later and say like, hey, do you remember that conversation we were having? Like, do you know why mama asked you that way? Or do you know why mama was whatever? And we backfill the information for him. But, you know, we had to learn how to, you know, like I had to not make Logan's journey and what was going on for him personal about me. Yeah. I had to figure out what was going to be, what is going to be best for him? How are we going to best show up for him so that he has the best chance at communicating, understanding conversation pace? Just, you know, when should I stop talking and when should I start talking? I can't tell you how many times my child has asked me after we've gone out to eat, he'll talk to like a server or something and he'll say, now, be honest with me, mama. Did I talk too much? Was I going too long? So we do a lot of that too in our house.
That's awesome. I love how you kind of teach, but then you give, I don't know, in another moment, you like reinforce it. I feel like one of my weaknesses is I want to teach my kids in the moment and they might not be that receptive. Plus, I might be a little angry, which never makes for great communication, but just kind of teaching and then revisiting it later. And then, so I come from the world of education. I was a high school principal for 5 years, which shocked a lot of people because when I was 13, I accidentally lit my school bus on fire with rubber cement. And everyone just thought I'd ruined my whole life. But I made it a point to always go to all the special ed meetings at my school as the principal, because I was in special ed when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And they never could, like, I was diagnosed with like dyslexia and ADHD, but they never could figure out why I misbehaved so bad. And they're like, okay, here you go. You're in special ed because we don't want you disrupting the rest of the kids. And one of the things that I feel like is underappreciated is that especially our teenagers, like most teenagers, like they shift like between the age of like, I don't know, 10 to 12, you go from this point where you are not really aware of kind of how the world perceives you, and you're just free, living in your own mind, just enjoying it. And then you get this hyper awareness of how the outside world might perceive you. And we see teens take it too far and they hate themselves and they just have this really bad, I don't know, perspective. Anyways, the thing that I feel is important is in those teenage years, not only are we helping build skills, but to build that identity where, no, like, if this is who you want to be, let me help you do that. My kids, one is determined he's going to play in the NFL. Another is determined he's going to be in the NBA. The whole world is here to tell them just how improbable that is. Mm-hmm. I think my job as a dad is to be like, okay, so if you want to do this, how can I help you?
Yeah.
And some days it looks like me kind of giving them an extra little push to get them to the gym. Other days it's me listening to their excuses and being like, okay, so here's what I think you should do, but guess what? It's your life. You make your decision.
Mm-hmm.
And I love how you kind of, I don't know, you've kind of been the change in your life to create ripple effects for generations. And now you're like in a place where you can actually help your 20-year-old, and really, that's awesome. So let's kind of get on track. I never go to script, by the way, so this is just how all my podcasts are.
That's all right. I don't outline mine either. When people listen to mine, they're like, do you do big, long outlines and stuff? I'm like, no. I put down a few points, and then I literally turn that mic on, and I just rant and rave for 30, 40 minutes.
That's what I do. And I had had other people on my podcast and been on other people's podcasts, and they'd either want an outline or they'd give me an outline. And then I was on Jody's podcast and Jody Moore, and she's like, oh yeah, we'll just talk. And I'm like, if she can do it, I can do it.
Exactly.
So here's kind of what I wanted to talk about though today. I have been the poster child for like weight loss, like how most people do it. Like, oh, I'm going to do this diet. I'm going to do this exercise. You go all in, you do the diet, you do the exercise, and then you have weight loss. You get these results, but you always go back to your old ways of being. And I'd always be like, guys, I lost like 50 pounds. I can eat whatever I want now. Let's do pizza and ice cream. And eventually you always go back to your old ways of being. And I believe that to create real lasting change, it's an identity process. You have to create shifts in your identity. And so some of the things that I'm curious about, like, what did that shift in identity, what did that identity process look like for you when it comes to losing 100 pounds, when it comes to building a wildly successful business? What did that identity process look like for you?
Well, specifically with weight loss, one of the things that I teach is you have to lose weight the way you plan to live your life. Like, you should never lose weight in a way that you can't see your future self doing, until, especially for women, because you need to be able to do it when you're in your 80s or 90s. And I always use my grandmother. I have one living grandmother left. She's 84 years old. She still calls me on the regular to ask about how to lose 20 pounds. I tell people, like, I promise you that desire is probably never dying with any of us until we draw our last breath. So if that's the case, we want to set ourselves up to lose our weight in a way that we can live our life. And that requires creating an identity. So you have to figure out, all right, if I'm going to be someone who easily keeps their weight off, then that means that me today has to start becoming someone who's probably comfortable around all the foods. I can't be a restrictor. Yeah. You know, like if future self is going to be like when you said, now we can go eat pizza and ice cream, that means you today has to learn how to be someone who knows how to eat pizza and ice cream in a way that allows you to lose some weight, not gain weight, not be an overeater or be a maintainer. So it's a lot. And it's like loving the process. I tell people all the time, like the thing for me when I was losing weight that was the big difference maker was number one, every single day I woke up and I asked myself, what can I do that's a little bit different and better than yesterday? And so my identity was becoming someone who didn't sit around and think about all the ways she screwed up, all the things that were wrong with her. I had to shift my identity to being someone who was looking at her daily life and figuring out, okay, if I'm going to be successful, what are some things I can do today that I know I can do? I'm not going to do impossible things. I'm not going to do things that require me to morph into a whole new human being today. I'm going to do things that today's Corinne feels confident, strong enough, competent, willing. I could make myself do it just in the event something, like for some reason, an excuse flies into my mind. And that really helped me become someone who was a doer. And that was another thing that had to shift in my identity. I spent a lot of my life waiting to be inspired to lose weight, waiting to be motivated, waiting to be confident. So I was a good waiter and I needed to become a doer. And in order to become a doer, I had to start with figuring out like, all right, what can I do today? So those are like identity wise. Those are some of the things that we have to think about. It's like, I always like to think about the version of me who loses weight. What does her life look like? And what are the small ways that I can start doing some of that now? And when you go to that future identity, don't just look for all the glory. What does she do on a bad day? Yeah. What does she do after an overeat? What does she do when she don't want to? What does she do on the day she's tired? What does she do on the day she's stressed? Because here's the secret to weight loss. Your future self, her boss, is still a jerk. If she gets triggered by her mama, she gets triggered by her mama at 150 pounds, just as easy as she does at 250 pounds. Yeah. So much of your life is the same. The only thing that's different is you might like your body a little better. Like you might like the number on the scale, but those are moments in your day. Everything else stays the same. So you have to change as you are going down the scale because you'll have that same life around you.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I love that. So I teach this concept. I call it the wheel of life. I served a 2-year mission for my church. And when I turned 20, I was just depressed, grumpy, angry. And this old Argentine, I served in Argentina. He's like, dude, what is wrong with you? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm just mad and grumpy and angry. And he's like, ooh, you're on the bottom of the wheel. I'm like, what the crap is the bottom of the wheel? He's like, you Americans, you think time is a line. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's why we call it a timeline. And he's like, no, time is a wheel. It's constantly turning. And sometimes you're on the top and sometimes you're on the bottom. And when you're on the bottom, it sucks. And he's like, have you ever been run over by a wheel? And I'm like, yeah, actually hauling hay. And it hurt. I am on the bottom of the wheel. That training or that teaching didn't really take hold of my life until I was coaching football one time. And we're going through these drills, just doing our footwork. And one of the kids is like, we're never going to do this in a game. This is so stupid. Why are we doing this? Like, why can't we just go hit each other? And I'm like, look, dude, there's a wheel. And right now we're on the top of the wheel. There's no one trying to stop us from doing it right. There's no one trying to beat us, trying to push us down. When it's easy, that's when you're at the top of the wheel. And when it's hard, that's when you're going up against someone who's bigger than you, faster than you, stronger than you. And that's when you're at the bottom of the wheel. That's when it's hard. And we do this at the top to prepare us for when we're on the bottom. And all these football guys are like, oh, yeah, and kind of fired them up. The problem I see with a lot of parents, like you talked about being a good waiter. Most parents are waiting for their teenager to change or for things to be easy. And you have to kind of identify what are those hard moments with my teen? What are the hard moments when it comes to losing weight? And identify those. Okay, those are the bottom of the wheel moments. Mm-hmm. Now, what are some top of the wheel moments where I can start developing this skill, where I can go through these motions, where I can master them at the top of the wheel when it's easy, and then apply them on the bottom? And part of what you're talking about, in my mind, it makes sense. Like, oh, of course, you're just starting where you are. You're finding moments where you can make a little subtle shift, but you have this wider perspective. Like, here's why I'm doing it. Here's that future moment that I'm preparing for.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Keep going.
I was just going to say, and the same thing happens in business. I mean, it's always like, I always tell people, like, if you can lose weight, you can do anything. But it's this, like, we always have to be thinking about, like, in business and in weight loss, it's easy on your easy days.
Yeah.
You know, if we only had easy days, we'd all be successful. Successful people are the ones that learn how to cope, deal, and push through those tough times, those bottom of the wheel moments. That's when it matters. But so many of us, the moment things feel hard, or, you know, crap hits the fan in life, or something unexpected happens, or whatever, we think that that is like, oh, this is a reason to stop. And it's like, no, these are the exact moments you have to learn how to work through if you're wanting to get to where you want to go.
Yeah.
No one's life is ever going to be perfect. I mean, and it's just like with our kids. I loved how you were talking about this earlier. I don't know if that was before we started recording or not, but so many of us put our personal worth into what our kids are doing or not doing.
Yeah.
And we have to remember, like, your kids are going to be messy, but your self-worth should never be their responsibility. There's lots of things that your kids can be responsible for. They can be responsible for their chores, go make some money, whatever that is. You can teach them personal responsibility, but parents need to quit teaching their kids that they're responsible for their emotions. You're responsible for you feeling like a good parent. You're responsible for you feeling competent, like you're showing up. Regardless of what your kid's doing, you get to decide, I'm doing the best I can or not. But I think that that's like one of the things I have always, I grew up with a very young mother. She was 17 when she had me. My dad was 16. And so much of her identity to this day, my mother's in her 60s. So much of her identity is still tied up in my brother and I. I watch her. She has good days when we have good days. And when she has bad days, if we're having bad days.
Yeah.
And I'm always trying to tell her, like, Mama, we are always going to, like, you have to quit having bad days when we do, because that puts pressure on us to think we can't have a bad day because we're responsible for your emotions. I've talked to her so much about, not because I feel bad, but more of like, as a coach, I'm like, you owe it to yourself to have more better days.
Yeah.
You don't need to live your life for us anymore. Those days can be over now. So anyway, I just wanted to add that in.
Yeah, I love that. So I spoke at a high school graduation, the first time I'd spoken to a big crowd, and I invited my parents. And I didn't tell my mom what I was speaking about, but I talked about, like, this, I don't know, trusting yourself, trusting that your bad days, your struggles are what you need to become who you're supposed to be. And that's what builds the strength. Anyways, I shared the story of me lighting my school bus on fire at 13. And my mom, like, she was in like second or third row, turned bright red. Like, to this day, like, that is hard. Like, that was a traumatic experience for me and for her. And I remember just how much of her identity was wrapped up in that. Like, what are the neighbors going to think? What are the people at church going to think? What you're talking about is so powerful, because when you can separate yourself from your teenager, when you can just, so I call it being the mom of your dreams. Like, I think we all have this version of ourselves that, for me, I got to know this version when I was like 15 through 17, whenever I'd get in trouble, I'd be like, man, when I'm a dad, I'm going to actually listen to my kids. I'm going to be fun. I'm going to be cool. Like, we have this dream version of ourselves. And then for whatever reason, we get into like real life in the real world. And we just parent how our parents parented. And we never take the time to be this ideal version. And it's so powerful when we can know, no, this is who I want to be as a mom, as a dad. Now, regardless of how your teenager shows up, you simply be that dream version of yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think it would, so I use this in business. Like there's days where I'm on fire. I'm on the top of the wheel and creating content's easy and it's fun and I love it. But then there are also days where I'm on the bottom of the wheel and maybe some haters are trolling me or something. And those are the days and I have to remember, no, this is who I want to be. This is like the business, the entrepreneur of my dreams, and continually show up regardless of what's happening outside of yourself.
Yeah.
And I feel like so many times, especially as parents, we try and control our teenagers' models. And anytime we're trying to control how someone else thinks or feels or behaves, that's less energy that we can apply to our own model and be intentional. So I love that you brought that up. One of the things I would ask, like, as you created this identity change, like, what was the time process for that? Like, do you feel like you're still creating that identity change, or are you pretty locked into, no, this is who I am when it comes to weight loss, this is who I am when it comes to business? Talk to us about that a little bit.
It's always evolving. I think that's one of the things that I've noticed is that about every year or two, I like have a different version of me. Like what I loved, like when I first started losing weight, like my dreams and aspirations and like how I wanted to eat and how I wanted to exercise and stuff was, especially with exercise, I was not an exerciser my entire life. I didn't even play sports in high school. And then when I would go to PE, as a principal, you'll appreciate this, my PE teacher, because I was so overweight, often would tell me, you need to sit on the bench. I don't want to make any of the kids have to pick you. And so she would just set me out. And so I had zero athletic experience, but when I was losing weight, it was a dream of mine. You want to talk about an identity. I wanted the identity of an adult athlete. And so I spent my 30s and early 40s. I did 8 Tough Mudders. I did 4 marathons, but only one marathon was just a marathon. The other 3 had a half marathon or like a series of days.
Yeah.
Built on top of them before you ran the marathon. So I was doing all these ultra events, triathlons, you name it, I was doing it. Well, in my 40s, I've shifted. I love lifting weights. I don't want to do long endurance events anymore. I don't even sign up for events anymore. I've done like 60 half marathons. I could give a crap if I ever do another one at this point. I may want to one day, I may shift again. But what I've noticed is that I'm always paying attention to my identity. And so I craft them. I work towards them. I try to embody them. And then when something feels rough or gross, or I just notice that I just can't get my energy up for it anymore. Yeah. And I'm kind of, I often describe it as when I feel that moment where I'm dragging myself along because of an identity I've had, I use that as a point to say, like, is this what I really want for myself now? And I don't do this in the moments when I'm tired or stressed out or whatever, but I'm in one of those spots right now where I've been questioning, all right, I'm getting close to 50. A lot of what has worked for me now almost feels, it's so habitual and it is who I am, but it also feels sometimes tiring or a grind or...
Yeah.
I just noticed my energy has shifted on it. And so I've been talking to my coach about re-examining everything I think, like who I am, what I just do, what I should, like, you know, I don't use a lot of shoulds, but I like to, when I'm journaling, try to uncover where are my hidden shoulds. Like I've come up with like a, you know, Corinne's hidden rules of living.
Yeah.
And they're usually like, well, you should do cardio 4 or 5 times a week. And they sound innocent and healthy and lovely very often. But I look at those things when I'm not at the at that bottom of the wheel moment. Like I don't make decisions on whether or not I'm going to continue going for a goal in the moment I feel like, but I get a good night's sleep. I journal on it for a few weeks. I really think about those decisions. I know I'm going to want to use excuses and drag myself through. And it's like, this is just the part where we're figuring it out. So my identity has changed several times. I think it always grows. I think when you are like, when you do weight loss, there's your beginner's mindset identity. There's the middle of the journey. There's the end. And then you have to create the maintenance version of you. Yeah. I have like an entire maintenance course in my membership. We have a lot of people who lose weight. And one of the things that I noticed is that they didn't know how to shift from being a weight loss person, one who struggles with their weight for the rest of their life, into shifting into the identity of, this is who I am now. I can release the worries, like, and I teach them how to calm it. And the same thing happens in entrepreneurship. You know, I've had different identities the entire time. I'm crafting a new one right now. I started off as a solopreneur. I did every job in my company. I am the best at every job in my company to this day. And I've got 27 employees, but in any given moment, I'm like number one, and my identity is shifting to being a CEO and not the best employee. I don't need to hang my picture on the wall anymore. employee of the month. So it's would want your people to hear, like, as a parent, like, my identity as a parent has shifted so much. You know, when Logan was little and he got his diagnosis, my identity was therapist. Yeah. You know, like, I didn't feel like I had time to mother. I felt like it was a full-time job, getting where he needed to be, practice his therapies. And there was like a fear on the inside that if I took time to just enjoy him or love him and do those things like most moms can do, that I was losing time on saving my baby. Yeah. And so then in his teen years, when things really started getting hopeful, and, you know, my son's 20, he writes software now. Like, he works for our company. He's the hardest little worker. Every morning he's like up and going before, you know, well, and I get up pretty early, but he's up, he's working. We never have to stay on him, and he just does the things. I'm so proud of him. But I had to shift my identity as a mother again to relaxing and enjoying and teaching myself that it's okay to not worry about him constantly. You know, I know worry, like, I always tell people my thoughts on worry is that worry sometimes is necessary. I used to say it was never necessary, but it is human nature to want to worry. Yeah. And I finally just made peace with, there are just moments in our lives with our children where we can't turn off the worry. So let's at least make it productive. And so I taught myself how to worry about him productively, not just spiral all the time. And so I think we all are shifting identities all the time. I mean, life just changes all around us. And, you know, our wants and desires change as we get older, as things change. And I think that's normal. It's just do a intentional reset. Most people's identities get formed unintentionally. Exactly. And I'm just a big advocate of doing it on purpose.
Yeah, I love that. So in my membership, I teach about identity, and part of that identity process, like, it's really good to kind of, I teach about GPS and how your identity is kind of like GPS. And GPS really only needs to know two pieces of information. It needs to know where you want to go and where you are right now. Mm-hmm. And so many people get hung up on like where they were last week or last month. And it's like, no, GPS does not care.
Exactly.
Where you are now and where you want to be. And it's powerful because that is your identity. When you know, oh, this is who I am. Like, this is where I am. These are my strengths. These are my weaknesses. And here's where I want to go. That acts like kind of having a compass in your hand from time to time. You can, especially as a parent, like when you're in a tough parenting moment, if you have your identity and you know, okay, here are my strengths and weaknesses, here's where I am, and here's where I want to be, in that tough parenting moment, you can look at your compass and be like, oh, well, this is who I want to be, so here's how I'm going to show up right now. The thing that I also teach when it comes to identity is values. And people, most people don't actually know what their values are. When I ask people, hey, what are your values? They typically tell me what they want their values to be, or kind of what they think I think their values should be. But no one takes the time to really understand, oh, these are the values in my life. Like, so many times I'll ask people, what are your top values? And health is one of those. And then we go through a process where you have to prove your values. And I'm like, okay, sweet, what have you done to be healthy in your life? And they're like, ugh, nothing. Like, I binge watch Netflix and eat ice cream all night. I'm like, okay, that's just good to know. So health isn't actually one of your values right now. It's more relaxation, more entertainment. And when people become aware of what their values are, they can then craft their identity to match their values. Mm-hmm. And they can then intentionally choose what values they want driving their life. And one of the things I've found as a dad and as an entrepreneur is that we think we value things, like we project like into the future. And we think, oh, well, man, when I'm successful or when my kids are older, here's what I'm going to value. But you can never know until you actually show up. And when you actually get in the moment, that's when you realize that, oh, like when you talked about doing cardio, which I've never been a fan of cardio, but weightlifting like that, I love that. Like, your values just shifted. Yeah. And when your values shift, it's important to be aware of that and understand why. Because like sometimes I go out of town, like I was just at a James Wedmore conference, I ate like crap the whole entire time because they fed us and you're out with other coaches and like, wow, this is kind of awesome. This is fun connecting, eating good food. But then I got home and I'm like, oh my goodness, I feel like crap. Mm-hmm. Because my values are shifting again. Like, I was valuing connecting. I was valuing experiencing it, being in the moment. But now I'm like, oh, you know what? I do not value my stomach hurting all the time. I don't value this.
That's the truth.
Yeah. And it's important to realize as you are shifting your identity, like, give it space to morph, give it space to evolve, because your values better not stay the same your whole life. Like, you might have a few core values, like, oh, I value serving and helping. But when your teenagers are teens, like, you're going to value different things. Like, when my teens were just two, like, I just valued that we had less pooplosions. And if I could like change the diaper earlier before it became like, that was one of my top values. That value is now irrelevant. Like, so I really like how you talked about that shift in that process. Is there anything, this is one of my favorite questions to ask, because typically there's something I wanted to say, but they didn't ask me. Is there anything that you wish I would have asked you so that you could share this nugget that I haven't like invited you to share yet?
Well, I was actually thinking while you were talking, probably one of the most pivotal moments that I've had in Logan's lifetime happened when he was a teenager. When he was little, he didn't have a lot of language. He could say words very clearly. He was always super articulate, but he never had a grasp of how to like sequence conversations or like, he was just always really quiet because he could answer a yes or no question. I remember when that baby was three, he had a little president's placemat. You could put your finger on any president. He could just tell you by their picture, their full name. Like, he just knew all of them. But to tell me how he was feeling or what his favorite toys were, he couldn't tell you any of that stuff. Like, he just couldn't have those things. Well, in his teen years, he really became a communicator. He is as communicative as I am. Child loves to talk, and he particularly likes talking to me each day. Yeah. And so we went through this summer where it was an incredibly hard summer for me. I was launching several times in the business. I was just working a lot. We were growing crazy that year. It was the year that we went from 6 million to just over 10 million. So that's almost like your business doubling in a year.
Yeah.
And so every day, all I wanted to do was go sit by our pool and just be done when I was done. And I didn't want to talk to anybody because, I mean, I'm like you. It's like when you're a coach and you're a podcaster and you're a CEO, you literally spend your day talking to someone all day long. Yes. So I'd go outside, and then of course, here comes Logan, and he wants to talk. He wants to tell me stories about Russian operas and all the very eclectic things he's interested in that I'm not. And I had so much mom guilt and shame about that. And I was getting coached. And I remember one day my coach telling me, she was like, Corinne, how great is it that you sit there and you don't enjoy it and you don't love it and you wish it was over, but you're still listening? No one had ever said that to me before. All I thought was, I'm sitting here not wanting all that. I must be a terrible mother. Something's wrong with me. Why am I the one mother in the world who gets tired of their kids? You know, because you see all the things. And I would just tell your listeners, like when you talk about your identity, it was in that moment where we decided to call every minute of my motherhood, this is mothering. Like mothering is all of it. And I really re-identified myself as a mom in that summer by seeing like, it's not just the glory moments. It's not just the easy moments, but here are the moments I show up anyway that I don't even like. This is part of mothering too. And I was able to free myself of feeling so bad about not being at the top of that wheel 24/7 when it came to parenting. So I think that's what I would probably tell, especially the moms who are listening to your podcast, because mom guilt and mom shame is so real for us. We just think we have to do it this one way. Decide what your way is, and then don't be apologetic about it at all. You have no one to apologize for, too.
I love that. One of the things that I teach is that, like, I'm not the parenting expert. I teach all my clients, like, you are the parenting expert. I can never know what was best for you. And it's so empowering when you realize that what other people do, that's not your way, and that's okay.
Yeah.
I love that. And for me, the wheel of life, like, it just gives meaning to top of the wheel moments, which, by the way, people are programmed to not pay attention to the top of the wheel moments. Like, we typically focus on the negative and when we're on the bottom. But when you can catch yourself in those top of the wheel moments, you're going to find you're a way better mother than you ever gave yourself credit for. Like, all these times that it came easy and you just showed up as a mom of your dreams, like, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. But it also gives moment or purpose to those moments, because you can realize, oh, something I'm struggling with at the bottom of the wheel, I can just create those patterns in my life right here. And it, in my mind, it kind of takes me from having these high highs and these low lows to being more kind of like, my highs are still high, but rather than just squandering it, I'm being intentional, like, okay, here's what I'm working on. And then my lows aren't as low because I'm like, man, I worked on this last week. I'm ready to go. Let's have this conversation or this argument, or go ahead and talk my ear off. Even though I don't love this, I prepared for it already.
Yeah.
I love that. Why don't you take a minute? So most of my listeners are moms. I love working with moms, probably because I'm still trying to help my mom who struggled with the, well, she's doing awesome now, but like my avatar, moms and teens, if they wanted to lose weight, or a handful of the people in my program are themselves life coaches or businesses, if they wanted your help in either weight loss or business, where could they go to learn more about you and what could they get from you?
Yeah, if it's weight loss, I would encourage people to go to nobsfreecourse.com and take my free course first. I think we've had over 1 million people take it already. So you won't be alone in taking it. It's super helpful. It's easy. It's digestible. It's one of those things where you can, you know, you can be done super fast, and you will have very practical, simple to do things that will help you lose your weight. I'm not a believer in calories and macros and all that stuff. I am a believer in small incremental changes while we work on your mindset. And if you're an entrepreneur and you're, especially if you're wanting to start, grow, or scale your business, we have the No BS Business Women's Membership. We do have men in there. We're going to be dropping the women's part. At first, I wanted to be women only. And then I got to think, we had a lot of guys reaching out. Okay, I have a lot of bro energy in me. Like I just do. Like people always say, like, you're like a dude. Why don't you help the dudes? I'm like, all right. So we are, if you go to nobsbusinesswomen.com, you can get information about it. But it's for people who are really ready to adopt a CEO mindset. And CEO mindset starts on day one. It doesn't start when you have a team. It starts when you start your business. And it's really important that you lock those identities in, that you know what you're dealing with in your brain, because your brain will be like, we always think the biggest obstacle to starting our business is, well, I don't know how to launch, and I don't know how to do Facebook ads, and I don't know how to like build a website. We can teach you how to create your funnels and do all that stuff. And we do, but you will always be the biggest obstacle. Yeah. That will be what will block you more than any funnel, any email, anything, copy, all that stuff. So we blend both. We tell you what to do and what to start with while we work on your mindset to keep you moving and not procrastinating and overwhelming and worrying you can't do it and all that other stuff.
Okay, I'm sold. I might need to. I was actually wondering, like, can men join that? Because
we've opened in July, and then I made this decision about 2 months ago. We had one man join. And we were just going to stay exclusively women. And now, you know, talk about shifting your identity. My identity has been a person who's going to change women's lives. And that's not going to change. But I just realized I want to change like my overall mission in life. I had to redefine it, was to break generational curses of wealth and health for everyone. And I think men, on the weight loss side, I stick to the women just because it's a very private thing with women on weight loss. Like we talk about, you know, boom, boom, and how we feel, you know, in bed, how we feel about our bodies. We're having very private conversations there that most women don't want a man to hear. In the business thing, we're not having those kind of conversations. We're talking something that's very gender friendly.
Yeah. Awesome. And the cool thing is, like, when you said, like, originally your goal was to help all these women, if I learn how to be better in business, that's more moms that I'm helping anyway.
Exactly. So
I believe, like, that quote, the rising tide lifts all ships, like, that kind of supports that. Well, awesome. I will put these two websites, nobsfreecourse.com and nobsbusinesswomen.com, into the show notes. I have done your free weight loss course before. I enjoy that. My wife's always like, she uses your stuff against me all the time, but I'll check out your business one as well. And thank you so much for being on my podcast. This has been a pleasure. Just thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Everyone else, I will see you next week. I'll talk to you soon. Did you know that parents and teens all over the world are struggling? I believe that the most important thing that you can do in your teen's life is simply being an impactful parent, which means taking the time to understand what parenting traps are holding you back, and then taking that knowledge and using it to completely uplevel your parenting. This is why I've created a brand new quiz to help you better understand your own parenting traps. This quiz will help you pull back the curtain on your own parenting and gain some powerful insights so you can stop getting caught in the same old parent traps. This quiz will help you start being the parent of your dreams so you can finally create an impactful relationship with your teen. This quiz will take you less than 2 or 3 minutes, and it is completely free. If you want to take this quiz and better understand the traps that are keeping you stuck as a parent, go to benpewcoaching.com/parent-trap-quiz and get an insight into what is holding you back as a parent so you can completely uplevel your parenting. I'll see you soon.